It probably goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. We live in stressful times. Pandemics, wars, cost of living pressures, work demands, and constant social media doom scrolling. It's a pretty intense time right now. So what do you do to center yourself? Meditation, going for runs, therapy. Maybe you're a bit less healthy and into binging TV and numbing with ice cream. We're all looking for ways to escape our very modern problems, but the answer might actually lie in ancient wisdom from Greco-Roman times. Columnist and author Bridget Delaney has turned to Stoicism in recent years to get through her lows and highs, and she's used the philosophy to coach her mates through challenges and realised there's plenty we could all learn from the Stoics. Her new book is Reasons Not to Worry, How to Be Stoic in Chaotic Times. Bridget, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Nat. Great to be here.
So we have an idea of people who are stoic, this thought that they're cold and unfeeling. But what does it really mean to be stoic?
So Stoicism is a philosophy that kicked off in Greece around 350 BC. And it literally means painted porch, the stoa, where the philosophers used to meet and discuss, you know, philosophy, how to cope with life, big ideas. So the Stoics got their name from their meeting place, which was the porch. And just over time, it's been bastardized to mean, you know, someone that doesn't have feelings or is repressed, never cries. And that's, of course, not what the Stoics were at all. So hopefully if the book does anything, it kind of challenges that notion of what we think of as a Stoic.
Yeah, so what is it then if it's not that person who's unfeeling and never lets anything get to them?
It's someone who's tranquil or really strives to maintain a tranquil baseline state and regulates their emotions through reason. So kind of trying to cool, like if there's a impulse to anger, it's recognizing that, slowing down, cooling the heat of emotions that can often quickly overtake us and lead to actions that we may regret later on.
So Stoicism is something you've spent a lot of time with in recent years. How did you come to find Stoicism?
Really by luck. I'm not by nature a Stoic person, and I have a weekly column in The Guardian, and each week I need to write about something new. And I think it was one week in 2018, it was Stoic Week at a university in the UK, and one of the editors said, you should try this. And I tried it, and I just found it difficult. One week wasn't enough. But there was something in it that really, you know, captured my imagination. And then the following year, when Stoic Week came around, I got a group of mates together. We formed a WhatsApp group, and we decided to do Stoic Week together. And one friend got a huge amount out of it, and we were talking about it one night at the pub, and a publisher overheard us and said to me, I think there's a book in this. So this was all pre-pandemic. And so I then started really knuckling down into the research, reading as much of the primary texts from, there are three specific Stoics that I focus on, Seneca, Marcus Aurelius, and Epictetus, and reading kind of the writings around their work. And then, of course, the pandemic happened and it just took the Stoicism to a new level.
You aren't really like alone when it comes to people rediscovering and finding Stoicism for the times that we're in. Do you think the pandemic has largely been driving that? Like, what do you think it is that has people more broadly reaching for Stoicism right now?
I think it's a combination of not having, like, a lot of people didn't necessarily grow up in a religious household. You know, religion has kind of slipped away for many families, many individuals. And so when times are tough or when there's an issue that they're grappling with, there's not necessarily an existing moral, ethical or logistical framework to apply to their lives. And Stoicism and other philosophies can give people that in lieu of religion. And what surprised me about Stoicism was, you know, it felt to me very close to spirituality. It has a real ethos of the cosmos and everything being connected, and there's a real sense of wonder and awe about the natural world in it. And it felt, it was around at kind of the same time as early Christianity, and it just felt quite similar in some respects. But it doesn't have, you know, there's no church, there's no leader, there's no Pope of Stoicism. So it did feel that religious and kind of ethical need. And it's also just, it's a fascinating time to study the Greeks and the Romans. They were sophisticated, I think, beyond, well, definitely beyond, you know, my understanding of what they were. They're amazing. So, yeah, lots of boxes ticked.
Yeah, lots of ancient wisdom. I love that kind of like religion for unreligious people, I suppose, yeah. As we kind of move into this like kind of hyper secular world that we're in. But it's also like a hyper loud world, a hyper capitalistic world. And there's a lot of challenges, I suppose, to what it is to be Stoic. In what ways do you think the world we live in right now is particularly challenging to Stoic practice?
I think, I mean, there's so many challenges, but one of the big things is obviously the internet and social media, which they didn't have then. So, I mean, there's a whole kind of branch of Stoicism, which is dealing with insults and, you know, coping when people diss you and, you know, how to navigate things when your reputation is under attack. And of course, those guys 2,000 years ago didn't know about social media yeah. was not a thing, but they were amazingly kind of prescient in how they saw the challenges of when we're under attack from lots of different people and we have enemies. And so you can apply the Stoic wisdom to being trolled on social media. You can apply it to just being ratioed on Twitter. It's amazing. And yeah, so I guess in answer to your question, they didn't have social media, but they did have, you know, enemies and fights and disputes just like we do now, but now it's more amplified.
A large part of Stoicism, and you talk about this in the book, is understanding what you can and can't control. Could you just unpack that idea for us and how we might be able to, what we could learn from that?
It's the most, I mean, I think it's probably the most profound thing in Stoicism, and I use it every day, and it's called the dichotomy of control or the control test. And it's basically you can only control three things in life, your character, how you treat others, and your actions and reactions. So everything else is outside your control, or definitely your complete control. And that includes, you know, health, wealth, reputation, desire. I mean, it's amazing with things like with love. You know, we can't control if someone, you know, if we love someone, we can't control if they love us back. We can apply for a pay rise, but we can't control if we get one. We can put a great application forward in a rental property that we're going for, but we can't control whether we'll get it. We can just do our best. And what happens is kind of often up to someone else. So when you start looking at things with that test in mind, you realize, oh, look, there's no point worrying about this because it's not within my control.
If that can be so hard to bear, though, particularly with some of the things you mentioned, you know, like, oh, if it's a career setback, then it does feel like it was your fault, even if it's out of your control, or a relationship breakdown where you're like, I could have done better, I could have done more, or health in particular, you know, people who put a lot of effort into exercising and eating right and being on top of their health can still have a huge health scare or health problem. So how do you kind of grapple and use Stoicism when our brains are just kind of wired to make us feel like we're at fault for everything in our lives?
Absolutely. And look, Stoicism's not, and the control test is not a free pass to neglect all the things that are not in our complete control. But, you know, the Stoics would say in relation to, say, health, you know what to do. You know that you should, I mean, they also, one of their virtues is moderation. So, you know, don't drink too much, don't eat too much food that's not good for you, exercise as often as you can. But they also said you can do all of that and you can still walk out, you know, onto the street and get hit by a car. So that's just life. And when you have that mindset that there's stuff you can do and it could help, but other things could happen, then the idea is that you don't get as stressed, you know, when things that are outside your control occur, because they were never within your full control anyway.
Yeah, it's an eye-opening idea, the Stoic principle of c'est la vie. I'm Nat Tenchich with you on RN. This is Life Matters, and I'm speaking with Bridget Delaney. We're talking about Stoicism because her new book, Reasons Not to Worry, How to Be Stoic in Chaotic Times, has a whole lot of advice from the Stoics about how to apply it to our everyday life. And there are tougher aspects of life that Stoicism still really tackles head-on and has a lot of advice for. You finished the book talking about grief and death and commenting on the Stoics' approach to these topics that may come off a bit harsh or weird, I suppose.
Definitely.
How do the Stoics believe we should grieve, and how does that help?
The Stoics believe that we should grieve while the person is still alive, essentially. Although I don't know if they say grieve, they more say we should enjoy our friends and our family while we have them, but be highly aware that they are mortal like everyone else and that, you know, they will die, they will get sick. And so don't waste a minute with the people that you love. Make sure that you really fully appreciate their company and have in the back of your mind that it's finite. It's a finite experience with people. And then the rationale for that is that when the person does get sick and die, or when you get sick and you're close to death, you don't have regrets that you didn't do what you could in the time that you were able. And Seneca wrote this amazing letter on grief, if anyone's interested in it. It's called Letter to Marcia, and it's a friend of his whose son died 7 years ago, and she was still grieving. And he writes very eloquently, it's quite harsh, but it's very beautiful, about, you know, time to put away the mourning robes and, you know, rejoin the land of the living. And, you know, maybe up to a year would have been a suitable time to mourn, but she was going on too long and, in effect, suffering twice. So the first suffering is the loss of the son, but the second suffering is the sorrow of mourning that takes over your whole life. So there's some brilliant tips on grieving in that.
It's so far away from the way, I guess, we're trained culturally to approach life today, not just in the sense of grieving, of like, feel all your feelings and be in it and present and feel everything. But, you know, also just this pressure to be desiring more all the time and acquiring more and being angry on the internet and grinding and, you know, showing off your best life and having it all. We kind of are in a society that really encourages wanting, and Stoicism really rejects so much of that. So I feel like it could be quite isolating to take on a philosophy that detaches yourself from everything else culture is really telling you to go out and get. Is that something you've found? Like, how have you coped with that sort of social aspect of it?
I mean, I haven't stopped desiring and wanting. I'm a human. But on the contrary, I think it's been a fabulous thing to have in this day and age, because you can see where you're trained to want and you can see where that leads. And often it leads into something I write about, hedonic adaption, you know, getting something that you want and then you get used to it and then you want a bigger thing and then you want a bigger thing. And the Stoics were all about, instead of thinking about what you can get next that's bigger, thinking about what you could have that's smaller. So I live in a very small apartment, but it has a beautiful view. And so when I think about Stoicism in relation to wanting a bigger apartment, I think about all the tiny apartments I've had that have had no view or no light. And I appreciate where I am more because I look back rather than look forwards at what I could get. I look at what I have had. And this is far better. So it's a great tool to you know, put into so many situations.
And socially speaking, do your friends then go, oh, I wish I could think like that, you know?
I think thinking like that is everyone can do it. It's just a matter of being conscious and swimming against the tide of all the advertising, all the social media, and thinking, look, I can enjoy. And the Stoics were of the world. They weren't hidden away in a kind of monastery. A lot of them were politicians. They had huge public lives. A lot of them were incredibly wealthy as well. But they were aware they could lose it tomorrow. And so they were just very careful about getting too attached, a bit similar to Buddhism. And so everyone can adopt this mindset, and that's the great thing about it. It's free. It's available to everyone. It's just shifting your thinking slightly, and I think it can make people more tranquil.
before I let you go, if you're listening and thinking, wow, this is something that I really need to embrace, this is something that could really help, and, you know, a lot of modern therapy approaches kind of take from a lot of these ideas of stopping, slowing down, assessing what's going on before reacting. What advice, Bridget, do you have for people who are looking to bring Stoic practice into their everyday lives?
I mean, I would advise them to start with a control test. It's so simple. You just write it down. So when you feel yourself getting incredibly upset about something, it could be that you've had a dispute with a friend and your friend has reacted really angrily and stormed off and isn't talking to you. Well, you think, okay, can I control that friend? I can't. I can control how I react to her, though. That's within my power. So just start with those small things. What can you control? You know, if you can control something, do your best. You know, be a good person in the situation. If you can't control it, don't worry about it.
I love it. Bridget Delaney, thank you so much for being with us on Life Matters.
Thanks, Nat. Pleasure to be here.
Bridget Delaney is the author of Reasons Not to Worry, How to Be Stoic in Chaotic Times.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.